Well, socialists are not the only ones who talk about a new Cold War between the US and China. It's becoming a commonplace in the mainstream media today. But we have an explanation for it. All the endless propaganda and punitive measures against China are part of a campaign by Western imperialism, principally the United States, to isolate and contain China and reassert Washington's hitherto uncontested hegemony, economically, militarily, and politically. Despite its enormous power, the US is in relative decline. Just compare its position now to that at the end of World War II. Then it was the unchallenged world superpower, the only one. Now China is an emerging superpower. It is challenging the US both economically and militarily. And the US is beset by truly massive, glaring social problems, obvious to everybody. Over the last three decades, China's economy has surged forward. Arguably, China now has the world's biggest economy and is vital to world capitalist economic growth. Per capita GDP remains low, but it's rising. One example says a lot for me, and I write it in our pamphlet. China now has 38,000 kilometres of high-speed rail. Plan to increase this to 70,000 kilometres by 2035. The US has next to nothing in this regard. Well, in response to China's rise, Washington and its Western allies have pushed a raft of economic measures. Huawei has been stopped from bidding on contracts. Chinese companies are not allowed to buy certain assets. Trump imposed a range of tariffs, which Biden has not lifted. Australia brought in an unprecedented foreign influence law. Along with these measures, there has been a non-stop drumbeat of propaganda. The Western campaign against China focuses on three broad themes or areas. Firstly, a fake concern for human rights centered on Hong Kong and the Uyghur Muslim minority in Western China. Two, charges against the Chinese government and China-based companies of tech surveillance, spying and industrial espionage. And three, whipping up a fear of Chinese military growth and capabilities. Well, at this point, we have to be clear, I think, on one key point. What is the nature of China in a socio-economic sense? In our view, it is capitalist. The state promotes and defends capitalism. China had a real revolution in 1949. Land reforms were carried out, and by 1956, the capitalist class had been expropriated. But the Mao leadership was always a privileged Stalinist bureaucratic caste. And over the last 30 or so years, it has restored capitalism. And Chris Lee's article in our pamphlet explains this transformation. But having said that, I think we have to recognize that Chinese capitalism has some very distinctive features. The extremely strong centralized state control and the structure of state-owned enterprises. There's some confusion about China on the international left. Some leftists oppose the US Cold War attacks, but to varying degrees, they think that China is socialist or at least non-capitalist. But the hue and cry about Uyghur oppression is just Western propaganda and downplay or reject claims that China is fundamentally undemocratic and repressive. Well, we can discuss all this, but I think such apologetics just weakens our argument. In fact, the case of China is only one instance of some leftists prettifying authoritarian regimes that come under attack by Washington. Other examples include Iraq under Saddam Hussein, Syria under Assad, or Zimbabwe under Robert Mugabe. Well, the US charges that the huge Chinese tech company Huawei is under the control of the Chinese government, and its technology will be used for spying, or might be used for spying. So we can't use any of their telecommunications equipment, even though it seems that it is the cheapest and best. Trump even wanted to force Chinese divestment of the popular video sharing company TikTok, accusing it of posing serious security and privacy issues to its 80 million US users. However, Biden seems to have let that one slide. But Washington's charges overall are staggeringly hypocritical. I just want to look at one instance. In early June, the G7 summit was held in Carbis Bay on Cornwall's North Coast. The leaders of the main imperialist countries had a closed session to discuss what to do about China. The final communique predictably attacked China on the Uyghurs and Hong Kong and the origins of COVID. If the G7 leaders had been so minded, they could have travelled up the Cornish coast about 100 kilometres as the crow flies to Buda. Now, Buda is the site of a government communications headquarters, GCHQ station, which plays a key role in tapping into transoceanic communications cables. This is the Tempora program first exposed by Edward Snowden in 2013. A Wired report at the time explained, and I'm quoting, interceptors have been placed on around 200 fibre optic cables where they come ashore. This appears to have been done with a secret cooperation, voluntary or forced, of the companies that operate the cables, potentially giving GCHQ access to 10 gigabytes of data a second, or 21 petabytes a day. GCHQ wasn't exaggerating when it used the phrase mastering the internet in documents. Around 300 GCHQ and 250 United States NSA operatives are tasked with sifting through the data. They use specific searches which can relate to trigger words, email addresses of interest or targeted persons, and phone numbers. GCHQ and the NSA have identified 40,000 and 30,000 triggers respectively. This data is shared with the NSA. Another report at the time explained that GCHQ has tapped 200 of the world's fibre optic cables. It is surveilling more than 600 telephone events a day, can intercept emails, check internet users' access of websites, and can see what people are posting on Facebook. So clearly, China has a lot of catching up to do. The West charges really are an extreme case of the pot calling the kettle black. Let's look at another example briefly. Last year, a scandal erupted in Denmark, largely unreported here. The Danish equivalent of the FE, the Danish equivalent of the CIA, was exposed as having spied on its EU and NATO allies on behalf of Washington. Left-wing Denmark-based journalist Ron Ridenour summed it up in a COVID action report, quote, Denmark's military allows the United States National Security Agency to spy on the nation's finance ministry, foreign ministry, private weapons company Terma, the entire Danish population, and Denmark's closest neighbours, Sweden, Norway, France, Germany, and the Netherlands. Well, this activity is exactly what the West accuses China of doing. Now let's look briefly at the question of human rights. There's no doubt in my mind that China, among other things, has a repressive authoritarian regime, a dictatorship. It represses the working class and forces them to endure a harsh exploitation, often for the benefit of big Western corporations. It also subjects the non-Han Chinese populations in Tibet and Western China to national oppression. In front of the whole world, it crushed the Hong Kong democracy movement. Whatever the political confusion and mistakes of this movement, calling for Western help, calling for independence and so on, overall, it was a very progressive, deeply rooted struggle for democratic rights. And socialists and the left had a duty to support it. But when the West hits China over its repressive policies, it is a bit hard to take it seriously. Just look at the United States. The Black Lives Matter movement shone a searchlight on the nature of US society. There is what has been called a new Jim Crow system based on massive black incarceration and racist killer cop forces across the country. In fact, incarceration in general plays a huge role in the United States. A Wikipedia report explains the facts. Quote, at the end of 2016, the Prison Policy Initiative, a non-profit organization for decarceration, estimated that in the United States, about 2.25 million people were incarcerated out of a population of 324 million. This means about 0.7% of the population was in prison. Total US incarceration, prisons and jails peaked in 2008. and the total correctional population peaked in 2007. If all prisoners are counted, then in 2008, the United States had around 25% of the world's almost 10 million prisoners. So the US had almost a quarter of the world's prison population. As of 2009, the United States had the highest documented incarceration rate in the world at 7.54 per 100,000. Well, a disproportionate proportion of this prison population is, of course, black and minority. Well, the West makes a lot of propaganda about China's military buildup. A February 26 article by Liu Zhen in Monthly Review explains that the Gulf War was a wake-up call for China's military leaders. The Gulf War, he says, sparked 30 years of chaos and turmoil in the once powerful Middle Eastern country, but also served as a rude awakening for China's military leadership. With the technology and firepower on show during the conflict, precision bombing, satellite guidance, missile interception, air-to-surface strikes to eliminate tanks, electronic warfare, one-way transparency on the battlefield, stealth bombers, the Gulf War was a psychological nuclear attack on China, observers say. The event helped to kickstart China's military modernization and led to the People's Liberation Army narrowing the gap with the US military so much that it is now considered a strategic threat by Washington. Desert Storm, he says, which lasted 6 weeks, marked the dawn of a warfare revolution, showing backwardness of the PLA at the time and sparked anxiety regarding national security, experts say. Well, that's the reality. China's military revolution and arms build-up, whatever else you can say, is fundamentally a defensive measure against the threat of a US attack. China saw what happened to Iraq and doesn't want the same fate to befall it. Even if China were a vibrant socialist democracy, which is not the case, it would still face the same US war threat and would be forced to develop a countervailing military force strong enough to deter Washington. Okay, well, Donald Trump has gone and Joe Biden has reversed many of his policies, but one area where he hasn't is China. In fact, he's pushed some new initiatives aimed at China. And a May 31 Sydney Morning Herald article by Stephen Bartholomews, who seems to be specialising in reporting what's going on in China's economy, discussed the situation and this bill, which Biden was pushing, called the United States Innovation and Competition Act. A sprawling $250 billion plus suite of legislation aimed squarely at enhancing America's ability to compete with China, along with a grab bag of other anti-China measures, is winding its way through the US Congress. At the core of the legislation, he says, is spending designed to provide incentives for domestic semiconductor manufacturing and research and development in strategic sectors like artificial intelligence, 5G wireless, quantum computing, biotechnology, and robotics, industries that China has identified as central to its plans for global technology leadership and into which it is pouring state funds. This bill calls for Taiwan's inclusion in international bodies, requires an unclassified report on the origins of the coronavirus, opposes international development banks' assistance to China, provides funding to counter predatory bilateral lending, that is code for China's Belt and Road program, and will impose more sanctions on China for its treatment of the Uyghurs in Western China, etc., etc. All right. And the US military, we might add, continues to guzzle an enormous amount of funds each year. It is renewing nuclear arsenal at great cost and continues to push allies like Japan to shoulder more of a burden of building a military force to counter China. Of course, just as in the long Cold War with the Soviet Union, everything is presented as the US responding to threats from China. In my opinion, the opposite is true. US bases surround China like a noose, and the US has a humongous nuclear arsenal and is the only country which has ever used nuclear weapons in war, and it still refuses to make no nuclear first strike pledge. The US routinely interferes in the affairs of other countries and organizes destabilization campaigns and coups. Washington is the aggressor and wants to maintain its edge. China is right to be concerned. Well, I'm sure David Brophy will have a lot to say about the China panic in Australia, but our pamphlet also refutes a lot of the hysterical claims about Chinese influence in Australia, so I'll be brief. I wouldn't dispute that China is active in the Chinese community here or that it surveils Chinese students in Australia or that it tries to cultivate political figures. However, the US influence in this regard is qualitatively greater than China's. We can assume it has agents, contacts and informants everywhere, in parliament, in academia, in the community and in the trade unions. I hope people read Jeff Sparrow's recent Guardian piece on Bob Hawke. When he was simply a great trade union leader in the 1970s, Hawke was in regular contact with the US embassy. He said one thing in public and another to his US friends. If Hawke were around today, he might well have fallen foul of the new foreign influence laws. After all, he was an unregistered foreign agent. Well, China's economic influence, I think, has been massively hyped. It is much less than that of the US. At the end of 2019, the US and the United Kingdom together accounted for 43% of foreign investment in Australia. China accounted for 5.7%, and all the restrictions will continue to keep China's share low. In some quarters, for instance, China was being blamed for the housing crisis. Again, this is utter rubbish. The housing crisis in Australia is the result of capitalist speculation, tax laws which facilitate this, and above all, the absolute refusal of state and federal governments to build quality public housing on any serious scale. Chinese investment plays an absolutely minuscule part in all of this. Okay, well, in conclusion, how should the left and the progressive movement respond to all this? I want to suggest four key areas for propaganda and campaigns. Firstly, left and progressive forces must campaign against any war with China. Secondly, Australia must break with the US war alliance, that is, withdraw from ANZUS, the Five Eyes intelligence sharing group, and the Quad, and anything else of that kind. Close down the US bases on Australian soil, especially Pine Gap and anything else used in nuclear warfighting. Three, our military should be reconfigured for strictly local, genuinely defensive activities. Scrap the frightfully expensive weapons programs, the planes, the submarines and the missiles, which are designed to fit into the US regional war effort and which have nothing to do with the actual defense of Australia against actual threats. Use the money instead for useful programs, the transition to renewables, public housing, healthcare and public education. Fourthly, we want to see the main elements, the commanding heights of the economy in public hands. Nationalise key sectors of the economy, first and foremost the banks, the mining sector and the power industry, under real democratic control. Then we would prohibit, or we should prohibit, any foreign company owning anything. If a foreign company wants to invest here, it should be a joint venture with the state under strict conditions, profit sharing, workers' conditions, environmental safeguards and so on. Thank you very much.